And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Well, hey, we're into March already of 2014. I can't even believe it. I mean, we started this a couple years ago. Hey, and we're all cranking up and we're having a good time. Well, the sun is shining in Illinois. Finally, we're starting to get some warm weather, but a lot of stuff is still happening. Denise, have you been able to call in yet? Okay. Our other scheduled guest today was Patty. Patty from the University of Illinois. Are you there by any chance? Okay. Well, off we go by ourselves for a few minutes. Hopefully they'll be able to join us. Well, as everybody's aware, you know, 1991 with the completion of Desert Storm and everything, we had a real mess on our hands. There was definitely use of chemical and biological munitions. The U.S. had provided chemical and biological munitions to Iraq for the use on the Iranians, and again, back throughout the end of the 1980s, and so all that stuff was available. And lo and behold, we knew that when we were doing preparing for the battles and the war and coming everything put together. We knew that we did not have adequate chemical and biological training, didn't have adequate medical care, and we had to get that all put together. So Bowers Raiders, obviously from 3rd MedCom, I was a member of that team. We put it all together, and we got it all taught and got everything in place. Just turned into a nightmare, and it continues to turn into a nightmare. With the completion of the ground war, the General Schwarzkopf found me and my team, and we got assigned to clean up all the friendly fire, the depleted uranium mess, and that's continued to be a nightmare. I can't even begin to describe how bad that is with the use of it all over the place. And as a consequence, our team went forward, and that included members from the 144th Maintenance, and again, they were New Jersey National Guard guys who were working with all the tank movers and everything. We had other units that were involved in it. We had transportation guys helping to move everything around. Colonel Bill Arell and his team helped move all the stuff. Well, Bill, as you all know, is deceased from cancer and everything else, as a lot of other members of our team and everything. So when you look at the picture, and some of you might have seen the picture of us standing under the destroyed Abrams tank with the 88s all around it as we're loading them on the heads to take them over to Daman, Bahrain, and back to the States. Well, it just turned into a mess. The individuals that were helping to do that work, they're in the photo, and whose 88s are there. One of them just found me here in the last couple of weeks. Thanks to Denise and all the Facebook pages. Some of you probably saw the Facebook discussion, and, well, now we got another individual who's sick and needing help and never got the care that we ordered way back in 1991. Nothing unusual there. Denise, have you been able to call in by chance? Patty, are you there by chance? Okay. Well, I guess I'm on my own this evening until one of them does call in. There's just so much to talk about and think about coming back in the past. The things that happened back in 1991, and we thought all was going to be taken care of, because as we knew, we had the chemical and biologic munitions. And again, thanks to James Toot, who did the stuff in the Regal Commission report, they got all of that information out, so we do know what was there, what was sent to Iran by the U.S. Army. And again, that's a devastating thing for all of us to think about, to look and listen to, as far as what did happen on all that. Why did the U.S. decide to send it? Well, it was for use on the Iranians and everything else, on the Iraqi Kurds, and obviously it, then when we went in and made the decision in December of 1990 to blow everything up, it came back on us. That decision to blow up Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles was made at Schwarzkopf's headquarters and at 3rd MedCom, and you can confirm that if you ever get a hold of the copy of General Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero. All you got to do is go to page 390 of the book, and you can read about the decision we made to blow it up. General Chuck Horner, as he says in there, they thought that they were going to be able to destroy everything. Well, we know they weren't, and some years later, 10 years later or so, Denise Nichols and I met with General Horner in Washington at a major after-action 10 years after the fact symposium, and as you said, well, you know, you guys, you were right. We weren't able to destroy it. We just spread it all over. So the health effects are continuing to linger from the chemical and biological warfare munitions that were distributed all over by the U.S. The big problem we ran into with all this stuff is the anthrax. As everybody knows, Iraq absolutely did have weaponized anthrax at the beginning of Desert Storm. that was shipped to him from Fort Detrick, Maryland. Again, that's in the U.S. Senate report, the Regal Commission report that Jim Toot wrote, and Senator Regal out of Michigan put together. So all that information is there. As a consequence of that stuff, we had to administer the anthrax vaccine. And the decision was made, again, Colonel Andres Cornegivat, Colonel Tom Little, Colonel Ulrich Bauer, and again, working with DG Zulis, the MedCom commander, and then all the way up above, we absolutely knew we had to administer the anthrax vaccine because we knew they had weaponized anthrax, as the U.S. Army sent it to them. If you get the Regal Commission report, again, that's in all the documents and Beyond Treason. You can pull it from the Senate files, you know, all over. It's on the Thomas Register, a lot of different places you can read it and see for yourself all the numerous shipments of the anthrax. Well, as a consequence, the anthrax vaccine had to be used. And as you know, with the anthrax vaccine, they didn't have enough of it. And as a consequence of it, they laced it with squalene. Now, squalene is an adjuvant rather than using alum and aluminum, and then what it does is it prepares the site for the reaction that provides the antibodies and everything else. Well, the neat thing about squalene, as far as military was concerned, you could take one dose and turn it into 50 doses because of the effectiveness of squalene over the standard adjuvants that were in everything. But we do know the squalene just creates a medical nightmare for everybody else, so it just kept going and going and going. Denise, are you there by any chance? Okay, hopefully she'll call in. Patty, are you there by any chance? Okay. Unfortunately, I don't have any direct way to contact the people we had lined up to come on the show today once we get on here. So we just have to hope that they'll come on and do everything else. Well, one of the same things, again, with the completion of the ground war, and we've talked about this, and I'm real tired of it, is the Department of Defense and various individuals within even the veterans community try to disavow anything about the depleted uranium team or the depleted uranium project. The DU team during Desert Storm and the DU casualties that we had, when we look at the total numbers of individuals involved in the cleanup plus the individuals that survived friendly fire, it's over 400 individuals. And obviously, you know, we gave the order for medical care to begin with, never got there. Denise, are you there? Patty, are you there? Okay. I was hoping they were going to call in. Well, there are several things that happened. They knew that they had no preparation for the use of depleted uranium munitions. They also knew that they didn't have any environmental cleanup procedures in place. We didn't have any medical protocols in place. And so that stuff just deteriorated all the way heck down there. So what happened... So I got two memorandum that came on down. The first memorandum was the Los Alamos memorandum. And unfortunately, I'm reading this right away, and it was clear as a bell. It came down to us and dated March 1st of 1991. And what it basically said is, we know there are serious health and environmental effects of depleted uranium munitions, but in order to sustain their use and avoid all liability, everybody was ordered to lie in their reports as they wrote up what they saw on the battlefield. Well, at the same time, we got another memorandum that was handed, the Defense Nuclear Agency memorandum. And in that memorandum, it confirmed all of the health effects, worried about the political consequences, worried about the economic consequences, and cited specifically that there were serious health effects from the residue of uranium munitions scattered on the battlefield. Again, the radiation exposures, as stated in the Defense Nuclear Agency memo, was at over 200 millirem per hour. We know when we got out to measure it, it was on beta and gamma, it was well over 300 millirem per hour and tens of thousands in the alpha count. The bad thing about this is your standard radiac and the radiacs issued to the most military won't detect it. It doesn't work. That's what we found out when we did that for first-hand work, and as a consequence, we had to develop new radiac equipment and new techniques that we developed during the Nevada tests in 1994 and 1995. When I was director of the Depleted Uranium Project. Denise, are you there by any chance? Patty, have you called in? Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, oh, man, how do you even begin when all this stuff has just gone to heck in a handbasket? Well, basically what happened is General Schwarzkopf got a memo from Washington, D.C., from the Pentagon, said, find Doug Rocky and the guys, and assign him to clean up the depleted uranium mess. So we did. We got up there up to KKMC, the 144th guys and the other transportation guys under Colonel Bill Durrell, they didn't have a clue what was going on. Nobody had given them any information. They had not told them or warned them about the radiological hazard, not warned them about all of the mixed waste where you have all the inorganic, organic compounds, you have the biologicals, and you have everything there. And they weren't warned. And again, one of the individuals who just found me on the, through the Facebook, thanks to Denise Nichols and everybody, was one of those guys. And he's got all the health problems that we anticipated and what we found from it. So again, they just continued on doing it. Well, this is all coming back because it's right now in March when we got assigned to do that stuff. And so we're looking at March in 1991. That's 23 years ago. Crazy thing for me is I went over to Nam in Southeast Asia on my first ArcLight deployment with U.S. Air Force with the B-52s during at this time in 1969, March of 1969. So again, many years in between for my own involvement coming on down. Denise, are you there by chance? Okay. Patty, have you called in? Oh, okay, unfortunately. We had everything planned out, what was going to do today, and this is not working out like I anticipated. Sometimes that just happens. Well, as our team got up there to KKMC, what we had to start doing was collect all the destroyed Abrams and Bradley tanks. We had to try and get everything else that was collected that had been shot up with depleted uranium. We had incredible numbers of Iraqi equipment, Iraqi tanks of all different types, all shot up and destroyed. We had all of the Iraqi BMPs shot up and destroyed. We had bunkers that were shot up, buildings that were shot up. It was just a horrible, horrible mess. Well, what we had to do in the primary tasking that General Schwarzkopf assigned me by name and our team to do is to collect all of the U.S. Abrams tanks and all of the U.S. Bradley fighting vehicles that were destroyed and anything else destroyed by DU and collect it together, and then we had to process it. Well, that turned into a real mess because the thing that we found out about this stuff is we had mixed waste. We have exploded ordnance, unexploded ordnance. We have all of the inorganic, organic compounds. We have biological materials and all this stuff scattered all over the place. And in the vehicles, you got the biological remains of the people that we turned what we call crispy critters. Basically, you just had to scrape up that stuff, what you could, and get it into a bag and put it away. We had to download the explosives out of the Bradleys and the Abrams because we're going to ship this stuff back to the States as much as we can. All of the 16 Abrams tanks had to come back to the United States. We had one Abrams tank that had a fire and everything with the DU had gone up in December of 1990. That was shipped back early, and then the rest of them, the other 15 of them, were all collected under the DU team beginning right now in March of 1991. And we collected those 15 Bradleys at KKMC. We collected the, 15 Bradleys and 15 Abrams and prepared those for shipment. Unfortunately, we had some of the Abrams, the Abrams could all ship back even though we're totally destroyed because of classification stuff. On the Bradleys, we buried a whole bunch in the desert. And again, one of the individuals that just found me after 23 years, thanks to the Facebook and when I did the Alex Jones show, was one of the individuals who used the 88 to move it all for us and shove it all into the hole. But again, the same thing has been told over and over again. We weren't there. We didn't do it. The team wasn't there. The individuals, there's no health effects. And it all goes back to Los Alamos memorandum that we were given, dated March 1st in 1991, to lie in all our reports to avoid responsibility and avoid all liability while we sustain proponency in the use of DU munitions. It's just catastrophic in nature. One thing that we notice is everybody getting sick already. We've got people already sick from all the pesticide misuse. We've got everybody sick already from the low-level nerve agent exposures. And again, that was sarin, cyclosarin, again from Kamacia and the other 105 sites that were blowing up. So just a mess all the way around. You had sarin, cyclosarin, somin, Kaboom, Novichoks, and Multiple 7. Those were the nerve agents that we had released on us. And then you had the whole host of biological agents that released. And again, those are in the Regal Commission report. You can read that online if you get a copy of Beyond Treason. You can watch and get the stuff, the incredible, incredible work that Gary Knoll did, Those documentaries, Killing Your Own, are available on, at GaryKnoll.com. Get those and watch them and read them and get the information and find out exactly what's happening. Denise, are you there by chance? Okay. Patty? All right. Well, as we started getting everything cleaned up, you know, we had the majority of those people that were wounded in action and killed in action during Operation Desert Storm were due to friendly fire. I had 100, we had 123 individuals that survived friendly fire in the Bradleys and the Abrams. And out of that 123, as you know, majority of them never got any medical care. Out of the our team, with everybody put together, again, the majority have never gotten medical care of any type, and that showed up again here again in the last week or so. And I continue to have the problems. It's just something that just does not want to go away. And unfortunately, we don't see any responsibility and accountability at any stretch of the imagination. Well, as we started to clean up all of the equipment, we knew that we had a hazard materials problem also. General Franks called us into his office, Fred Franks, and he said, we've got to go clean this up for the 7th Corps. We got hazard materials all over the place. This is the stuff they use to run an army. And then you've got all the hazard materials that are released during explosions and detonations and destruction of infrastructure. And just as the army moved forward, all this stuff is spread all over the desert, just a catastrophic and environmental nightmare of all stretch of the imagination. So anyhow, we're doing all this stuff simultaneously. So we're taking care of, the team is taking care of the hazardous materials. We're taking care of the DU stuff. The other stuff we had to take care of was captured equipment project. And all this stuff really happened to this day, and it just happened here recently, locally. Individuals come up to say the team didn't exist, they weren't there, they didn't do it, and nobody's sick and nobody's dead. Well, they most definitely are. They most definitely did, and they most definitely need medical care to this day. Well, the captured equipment project was another thing that we did. And in the captured equipment project, what we had to do was make an assessment of the operational Iraqi equipment for redistribution throughout the U.S. military and to our allies and to any other friends that we have that at that time we deemed friends that we want to ship this stuff to. So we've got tanks, we've got BMPs, we got rocket launchers, we got machine guns, we got AK-47s, we got landmines, we got everything under the sun. Because we captured this stuff, as everybody knows, the Iraqis basically just gave up en masse and kind of walked into the POW camps, EPW camps. And as a consequence, we inherited all of this equipment. Well, that stuff was brought together under the captured equipment project. What they first need to do is do an intelligence assessment, find out what was there. We absolutely rapidly concluded chemical and biological weapons had been on the Scuds, because we found that on the missile launchers, not even a question. Then we had to do an assessment of all the Iraqi equipment. Well, that turned into a nightmare in of itself, because we not only had all the organic compounds, inorganic and biological waste, what we found out, most of the Iraqi equipment had radiological isotopes all over it, for dials and gauges and as to make the equipment operate. So now we have a sudden realization, oh my. We have chemical and biological from the stuff we sent there that was destroyed, or we tried to spray and spread all over. Chemical and biological dispersed all over as we destroyed what Iraqi had in their infrastructure. And it's also happening in Kuwait. Then we had all the radiological isotopes and everything from depleted uranium. And on the depleted uranium, as you know, if you've read any of the formal reports, what we do know in there, the primary isotope is uranium-238. Then we have 235, uranium-234, we have uranium-236, we have plutonium, neptunium, and americium. So it is just a radiological cocktail and a nightmare. However, the big thing about this problem is the size of particulates are all developed when the deumination impacts and stuff. There's been a lot of discussion, but anybody who's seen a deumination fire, you know that the deumination, whether it's coming from a tank or an Abrams or an A-10 or coming from a 50 cal or a 7.62 machine gun, 25 millimeter, coming from 30 millimeter, 20 millimeter, the stuff is on fire the minute it leaves the bore of the gun. And then it burns all the way through in the air, shedding stuff and contaminating. We know it contaminates not only immediate outside of the vehicle, where it was shot, but when you open the breech again on the gun, all this stuff comes back into the inside of the vehicle. Denise, are you there by chance? Okay. Patty. Well, I'm going here 25 minutes by myself. A lot of fun. Okay, well, we continued on putting all this stuff together. And with the capture equipment project, what we did do was collect all this equipment. You probably should probably see pictures of it. We collected it at AMC Port B. We collected it over at the towers right there. And, again, the area that eventually where they came in and got up to Cobar Towers was the capture equipment yard. And that's where we put all this stuff together. And then from there, what we did is all the small arms, the landmines, the rocket launchers, machine guns, and all that kind of stuff, we put into Connex's for shipment back to wherever it was going to go. And we shipped it all over the place to our friends, and some of our friends at that time now turned into our enemies got it. And then, again, with all the armor, we had to redistribute the Iraqi armor we collected. Again, that's a whole host of different tanks that they had. And Bradley, and they're what's called a BMP, which is the equivalent of the Bradley Fighting Vehicle, and a whole bunch of other stuff. We had all the rocket launchers. One of the neat things for me is one of the Scud missile launchers, the rocket launchers that we had collected and everything, showed up at Fort Irwin, the National Training Center. And when I went out there with the 101st Airborne, this was back in 1992-93 era, there it is. Well, wow, here's the picture of when I sent it and tagged it to come here. And now it's sitting here, and it was very strange to run into this equipment. What we did do, again, that armor that we sent to the Fort Irwin, the National Training Site, eventually turned into my target stuff when we did the depleted uranium project, the burn test and the impact test. That happened in 94 and 95 when I was director of the depleted uranium project. So, again, it came full circle all the way around. Well, as we started to try and clean up the destroyed Abrams and Bradleys, we had a significant problem. We had exploded ordnance and all the contaminants from that. We had unexploded ordnance, which was extremely unstable, and we had to get that stuff out and removed. Unfortunately, other than a very few EOD people, they didn't want to go near this. And as probably everybody knows, it's been in the reports, you know, three of the EOD guys we did train up eventually did get killed. When Kamasia blew up, they went up there, the whole thing, and then Camp Doha blew up. They went up there trying to recover the vehicles, and they were in an Abrams that blew up with them in it. And I never gave them their medals either. They're still in my briefcase, or the papers anyway for it. So it just turned into a nightmare all the way around. Denise, are you there by chance? Okay. Well, after we came back, we started writing up our reports, trying to get all the information out, and unfortunately, nobody wanted to hear it. They didn't want to see it. They didn't want to listen to it. We worked not only within the Army, but worked with the GAO, trying to get the information out and put all this forward. Eventually, the first time we got everything put back together for our team was in January of 1992, end of January, going to be in February of January 1992. And we were tasked again to go to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio for a major medical conference dealing with the health and environmental effects of Gulf War. And again, this was at the Secretariat level. We had already had a conference at the 330th Medical Brigade, 30th Hospital Center at Fort Sheridan in Illinois in the fall of 1991, where everything was put forth and everything was identified, so health and environmental effects were totally identified what was going to happen. Colonel Andres Kornegibov, again, these are doctors, Army colonels, Army doctors, Andres Kornegibov, some of you have met, Tom Little, and our team leader, Ulrich Bauer. And again, all the rest of us had laid everything out, what was going to happen, and everything has come true 100%, which is scary for us. And unfortunately, we still can't get the medical care that everybody needs. Well, once we got to Wright-Patt in January of 1992, we laid everything out, exactly what was happening with depleted uranium, what needs to be done. We did the same thing with the oil well fires. As you all know, Colonel Herb Smith, again, who's still around but sick, Jim Runge, Command Sergeant Major Jim Runge, he's since dead, Andres Kornegibov, Colonel Andres Kornegibov, and obviously Tom Little were the guys that went up to clean up the oil well fires right when that started, or trying to find out what was happening. We had all of the health effects of all of that stuff. The other thing that happened, and what Colonel Andres Kornegibov came up with, is all of the particulates, what he called L. Escan disease. Andres, Tom, and Ulrich and the rest of us realized right off the bat that all of the contaminants were getting in on the particulates, and again, all different types, and being inhaled and create a nightmare for everybody. So Andres called that LS can disease. Well, if anybody's been following the Army Times or following the story today, we're seeing exactly the same thing. We got all the contaminants. We got all of the stuff on the dust. And now Patricia Kimmy in the Army Times has written up the stuff about the dust and how all the effects on all the health of everybody. So we've come full circle all the way across. We had the same stuff happening in Desert Storm. Now we got the same stuff happening all over again. I can't even begin to describe it, how bad that is. Well, once we got to the Secretariat in February of 1992 and met with those guys, they eventually issued the order in December of 1992 to develop the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute study on depleted uranium. In that AEPI study, we started here, and again, that was co-located right here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, and I was right there. And so what we had, the executive summary reading from this, in response to a congressional request, the Army Environmental Policy Institute, AEPI, acting under the direction of the Office of the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Logistics, and Environment, conducted a study to determine the health and environmental consequences of using depleted uranium on the battlefield, remediation technology that exists or might be developed to clean up the DU contamination, ways to reduce DU toxicity, and how best to protect the environment from long-term consequences of depleted uranium. Well, we started this in December of 1992, January of 1993, and it was a final report wasn't done, published until 1995. Well, along with this thing, we had to do the DU project because after I wrote the staff study, General Eric Shinseki, who is now Secretary of the VA, issued the August of 1993 order putting everything together, saying to provide medical care, do the training, and clean up the environment.
Yeah, Doug, I'm here.
Thank you, Denise.
Can you tell us the date of that order?
That order was August of 1993. And I think, didn't have individuals come up with that order recently and tried to, like, all of a sudden found it, even though we had given it to them years ago?
Yeah, it came up a couple of hearings ago up on the House. Paul Sullivan was handing it out.
Yeah, so,
didn't seem to make a difference to anybody, though.
No, I don't think anybody understands the consequences of that order, because here we have the Secretary of the VA today, who was then a one-star general when he signed it, in charge of the training. And that order, as you all know, got me as the director of the Depleted Uranium Project to develop all the Army regulations that General Shinseki signed off on. And yet and nothing's happening. Oh, man, I guess, and then the whole thing again, when Mike, and you were instrumental in helping finding Mike, as you know, the member of my team from 1991 contacted us this last couple weeks ago, didn't he?
Right.
And he had all the medical problems, and he had never been taken care of, had he?
Well, he's been to the War-Related Illness Center.
Up in New Jersey.
Right.
And they blew him off.
Correct. And I don't know if he was a member of your team, but he met you there.
Yeah, he, again, until I provided him the photograph, he had no proof that he was there. You know, and this is the same thing we've had over and over again. Well, one thing that's real nice, and I did talk to Dr. Matthew Reinhart and all them at the War Injuries Clinic in Washington, D.C., and they have made total arrangements to get Mike medical care as of Friday. I didn't even get to tell you that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that, so he's going to get to go to D.C. now.
Yep, Matthew is working on that, and Matthew, again, as you know, because you and I were both there, we provided all the information, the documentation, knows the truth, and the truth shall set you free if only the VA and the Department of Defense and the Army would do so.
True.
Well,
so
I mean...
So they're setting him up to go to D.C. War-Related Illness. Let's tell people about the War-Related Illness Centers. There's three of them, one in New Jersey and one in Washington, D.C., and the other one is in Palo Alto, where you send, if you need to find out about getting a referral, it has to be done by a VA physician to refer you. They keep saying they know nothing about it. but it's on their own computer system. If you go to va.gov and over on the right side, there's a little search thing. Just put in war-related illness center, and it pops up. And it tells you how to get a referral and where you'd go, which one. It depends where you're located in the country.
Yeah, it's under it's VHA Handbook 1303.5. I'm looking at it right now. It was dated July 15th of 2004. And what Matthew has been very clear of, and Denise, as you just said, and when we've talked to Brenda Jasper, who runs the Washington one, is that you go to your primary care physician. The referral, the consult, is on their computer, so all they have to do is you sit right there in the office, and in a little while you can type it in, get all the information in. They do an electronic link because they have your records on the computer now, and you're off and running up to Washington, D.C., or to East Orange, or where's the other one?
Palo Alto, California.
Wow.
And the doctor out there, neurologist, I've met him several times, and he's been very helpful for vets out there. The most positive things that I've heard from people that have gone is overwhelmingly D.C. and then Palo Alto. But it depends on where you're located in the states of where you go. And that's all explained on their page, on their VA government page, va.gov. All you have to do, type in that war-related illness. And on that page, it tells you with a map of where you're located and where you'll be referred to.
Yeah,
and if you're not happy, yeah, I would push to, you know, those that went to Agent Orange, Orange, New Jersey, I think is where they're at. You know, let people know and see if you can get referred to the other one.
Yeah, I'm looking here at the handbook on the mission. The mission of the RIS is provide health-related service to veterans who have served in theater of combat operations or in combat support during past, current, or future conflict and who subsequent to such service have suffered, are suffering, or suffer from difficult-to-diagnose disabling illnesses. Said services include clinical care, risk communication, education, research addressing potential environmental exposures and experiences, and adverse health outcomes.
The other problem we're having with them is the follow-up when you go back home to your VA. And a lot of physicians don't like to be told what to do. When you're having that problem, if you've gone and you're having that problem, I would recommend you call back to the RISC and get them to coordinate with the doctor over the phone, person-to-person type thing.
Are you there, Denise?
Yes. So,
okay.
You know, if you're having trouble after going and your doctor doesn't want to kind of go along with their plan of care that they develop, then, you know, you need to follow up and call the RISC and tell them the doctor's name and his phone number so they can coordinate better over the phone.
Yeah, the main contact for Washington, D.C., and again, I've been in total contact with them this week. And
well,
Matt and I had
Doug,
a long
I think
phone
the
number.
Best thing is tell them, get with your primary care. Have
yep.
them pull it up on their computer, because calling the DCVA and the RIS Center, all they can do is you've got to get a referral from your primary care doctor.
Exactly. But sometimes they can grease the skids, but first you need to go to your primary care and get this all done. But then if you do have some problems, call them up in D.C.
And like I said, it's all on the VA.gov page for war-related illness. All the references are there. Use them, people. Use the VA.gov page. It's got a lot of information on our benefits, how to go about getting your claim started, how to get referred. All of it's there on that website. All you have to do is dig into it.
Unfortunately, and again, this is the other thing, too. One of the things that we do have, and you can obtain this, is, Denise, I know you were instrumental in getting this to happen. Those of you that have been deployed, you should have completed the post-deployment physical assessment form, okay? And it's a Department of Defense Form 2796, or the different iterations of this stuff. And again, what this form does, it gives you all your basic information in there, your gender, service branch, component, where were you at, what the dates are, location of the operations, where were you doing, what was your rank, and everything else. What areas of operation did you work in? And the whole thing, name of any special operations. One thing that we've had, and I again discussed this with Dr. Reinhardt the other day, and I've discussed it with my own care team at Danville VA, is you got to update this thing, because one thing we do know, and Denise, you've been involved in that, we see medical complications that show up long after the initial return from back to the States.
Right. In fact, Rowley has had complications over the past year.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, is one of the things, and then the weather, this winter has been devastating with the incredible cold and the changes in weather and the barometric pressure going all over. We're seeing reports, and again, suffering ourselves, that the medical problem has been complicated. You might see in the spring and in the fall, as the weather starts changing, you'll have a flare-up of all these things, and this is due to the physiology, anatomy and physiology, and the effects of all the toxic exposure in the body, but you'll see a flare-up in the spring and in the fall. Well, with the weather being incredibly stable, these flare-ups have blasted all winter long this year. And that is just really bad news. The other thing on this post-deployment physical assessment form, you know, it talks about the immunizations that you had, and we've already talked about that. Denise, I mean, the immunizations. I mean, how many immunizations did people get, and how many of the stuff wasn't even recorded?
Yeah. Any of the immunizations in theater were not recorded on the whole, and any records of them have vanished.
One day there was a fire. Well, you know, it's like
vanished.
Yeah.
And the PB pills weren't recorded in your shot record. The anthrax vaccine wasn't recorded. If it was, it was labeled type A. Botulinum. We're now looking at the ciprofloxacin that was given in theater and never written down.
And we know that today is definitely contributing to the neurological problems, because research has verified that.
So we continue on. Our RAC committee will be having a call-in on March 19th to talk about their recommendations for this report that will come out April 28th and 29th when they meet in D.C. The VA has... told them they can't review the VA research. So Mr. Benz had to pull that out of the report. We have access to that, where he evaluated the VA research. Then we have the report for the definition of the Guffor illness, or whatever you want to call it, multiple chronic symptoms and systems involved. And that will be coming out here on March 12th at 11 a.m. on their website. So the RAC started by act of law that was advocated and pushed for by the veterans themselves. The VA has interfered with the good functioning that we had. They replaced six members, and they're going to replace the other six the same year. It was supposed to be a year in between. So we have a bill that will be coming out soon of trying to put the teeth back into the committee, and have not seen that draft of the bill yet, but it should do the job. But we're going to have to push it through the House and into the Senate. So that's coming up. Hopefully it'll be out very soon so we can all read it and begin to push for it by bill number. And we need the RAC. The RAC has done good work. The DOD CDMRP research program has done good work. VA has dragged their feet as usual, and we saw that with Agent Orange. So we have to be aware of the efforts that are being made to correct the situation and back it up wholeheartedly, calling our representatives and getting them to co-sponsor this bill when it's introduced. The ANVETS have already been to the Hill for their annual winter meeting and have pushed it, telling people about it in every door they went to, and they included it in their testimony. So there's been some work with the service organizations to get them updated and get their help, and we need that. The registries that are offered to the vets, we're having vets have trouble get the normal registry that should be at the VA hospital in your state, at least be counted if you're sick. We have a problem with getting those done now. The data has not been compiled in many years. Our data for statistics hasn't been compiled for over 2 years, and they changed it from the GRU system to the pre and post 9/11, which watered down the effects, I think. So we've got a lot of problems out here with the Gulf War illness that need to be corrected so that we can move forward. Claim situation, I think more of the claims are moving through. They're in the backlog, as everybody is. It hasn't been decreased because they still have new ones coming in. I will tell the vets they need to go on, and if they haven't put a claim in and they have problems, please get on the ball, get with a veteran service organization, be it county, state, Veterans Affairs, VFW, DAV, American Legion, and Vets, Purple Heart Association can help you. Get those claims in. The next thing down the road that we're going to have to tackle pretty soon is our presumptives with the Gulf War have a dateline on them of December 2016, I think it is. So that will need to hopefully be removed. The date on that hopefully will be removed, just like Agent Orange presumptive deadline was removed years and years ago.
Well, we're still running Agent Orange problems. I was at Walmart today when, again, notified some other, another friend came up to me and said, you know, well, another friend had died who was a Vietnam Agent Orange thing, and the widow was just dumped. They were dumped. You know, I mean, it's just turned into a total nightmare. I'm getting the same thing. You can go to the VA and everything else, and what you can't find in the VA medical libraries, you can't find online that the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, or the Marines is... The Zoom Alt report on Agent Orange, it was written, geez, back in 1990. I mean, that is still hidden from the veterans, and you have to ask the question, why? Again, you can get that report on the Beyond Treason website. It's up there. Go to that and go to that document set and pull up the Zoom Alt report on Agent Orange and his testimony to the Congress that confirms all the health effects on direct medical care. The other day, I was sitting in this where I had one of our guests picking up tonight that I invited to come on, said they were yesterday, but something must have happened, is affected by the burn pits current time. That right. Individual didn't know about the burn pit memorandum that was put on by the MedCom confirming the health effects from the burn pit and directing to go to the VA for medical care.
Yeah, that was signed, registry was developed for them, and that's been signed into effect. So that will be a while before they set it up, but there is a law now that was signed on that. That's primarily for the post 9/11 again, ignoring any burn pits or oil fill fires that we had with the first Gulf War.
Which were all over the place.
And dividing these by time period is getting pretty bad. Our veterans on the bus bill died in the Senate. So we're stuck with caregivers that are post 9/11, and no one pre 9/11 can get the caregiver. So we have discrimination, I think is what you would call it, between war groups and the need that is purely out there. And I would have y'all look up the vote on that Senate omnibus bill and the ones that voted against it, and it was a budgetary item that they killed the bill on for now. I'm not sure what Senator Sanders is going to do next. I don't think he's going to quit. Our sexual assault reporting mechanism, Senator Gillibrand's bill was voted down. So they're not listening to the vets very well, people. That means you've got to get on the phone, go and meet your representatives and your senators when they're home. Please do that. Please tell them that the vets need these things done. No excuses. I mean, they sent us to war. These are earned benefits. They need to take care of the problems. We still have the, I think it's the base McClellan bill still sitting and not moving to take care of those at McClellan Army Base. And that has not moved, trying to get them care. I believe that involved Agent Orange again, being there. So we have just a ton of problems that our legislators, our people on the Hill, are not addressing the needs of the vets.
Well, you know,
and what
thing...
really irritated me was watching the Senate debate and the votes on the amendment was Senator Burr speaking against this bill and saying, why put more on the Veterans Affairs when it's broken? Well, where's the bill to reform the VA is my question. Where is the bill? And please do not tack on sanctions bills for Iran with a veterans bill. That has irritated every veteran I know. Veterans issues are separate from sanctions or geopolitical concerns of our country, and they shouldn't be mixed together.
I don't even know where to begin when they start doing that, because, I mean, you yourself and I have been with you, and a lot of other individuals have gone up and we've walked the halls of the House and the Senate. We have briefed multiple representatives and senators over the years. As a new one came in, you'd get them, we'd find an old one, and they'd help us. Bernie Sanders has been around a long time. God bless him. I mean, here's an independent who's been strong for the veterans from day one. You know, and he's still continuing trying to help. Him, Chris Hayes, and Bernie Sanders were just leaders in this whole thing from day one.
And it blew me away. The vote was Republican that went against it. Republicans were very quick to send us to war, but it seems like when we're needing help, that they're not always the first one to step up to the base. And I don't want to be party type, but, you know, that's just what I've watched in the past 23 years since we came home and I got involved, is it seems to be very hard to get Republicans to talk about veteran needs.
Well, I mean, we have...
There are some, but, you know, they're not all in the same, you know, following the same path for us.
Well, I mean, it seemed they're all, I mean, when I look at all this stuff, and you and I go back to the Vietnam era, okay, and we've been involved in all this stuff continuously. The sending us off to war all these times have been just a flagrant disregard for truth and justice and whatever has you. And then you look at all of the ramifications from going to war with all the contaminants been spread as we did the destruction, all the contaminants and the health and environmental effects of all the weapon systems we used. And it's just turned into a devastating mess, and it's kind of like I don't think anybody wants to accept responsibility and acknowledge what truly happened, because the majority of these casualties are all friendly fire.
Yeah.
They're not enemy engagement where you're going, you know, toe-to-toe with the enemy and you're getting shot up. We got those for sure, wounded in action and killed in action. But that's an infinitesimal portion of all the casualties that we've seen, whether... as long as I've been around from Vietnam forward, and we're seeing the same thing today. I mean, it's just devastating. When you look at the numbers and look at the diagnoses for the health effects, they're not getting from getting shot up or blowing up. They're all the other stuff that's coming down.
What I find interesting is this week MSNBC had a show on Rachel Maddow. And, you know, okay, MSNBC leans Democrat. Okay, but they did a good documentary. And it was why we went, and talking about going into Iraq in 2001. And as we know from the Gulf War and from that Operation Iraqi Freedom, you know, you look at the political ramifications and what is needed by the countries, not only U.S., but, you know, worldwide, since we're the superpower. And it was all about oil, and she documented it so well, had so many good interviews with people that were involved in that. And to know that our forces went and protected the oil fields first, and we all remember the tearing up of their museums, their culture being robbed because they went and stole from their own museums. We did not provide protection for those areas, but we provided it for the oil. And people have to look at what brings us into a war. And it's not normally what they say it is. And when people come back and they're trying to adjust and they start opening their minds to why were we there, it's a huge adjustment. It can cause a lot of PTSD.
Well, I mean, considering it was 45 years ago this week that I headed over my first arc light to Southeast Asia, Nam, supported bombing operations. And we'd all believed in everything. And then, as we all know today, the history books have been changed and altered. the Gulf of Tonkin incident that Johnson and McNamara used to get us totally involved in Nam, it escalated and never happened. Never happened. Did not occur. You know, but a whole bunch of us bought into that stuff, and then we had the same thing happen with Desert Storm. We had all these claims of all the atrocities. No doubt, again, the bait and switch, that, you know, again, the whole thing, Kuwaiti's stealing the Iraqi oil. Iraq goes in there, invades, we give them the go-ahead to do it. And then they had all these claims all over the place of all these atrocities, and we never found those atrocities once we got in there. It just goes on and on and on, and when you see the reality and you read the documents and then you see the orders like we got to lie about the health and environmental effects of depleted uranium to sustain their use without any liability, and then they issue the orders for medical care, and they deny the medical care even though they issued the order. Shinseki issued the order personally, cut and dried, end of story. Shouldn't have any question as a military officer, shouldn't have any question today as a Secretary of the VA.
And I don't know who under him is tearing up the rack. I don't understand that if he was the man that signed these orders and knows why he's not paying more attention to the Gulf War illness problems. It is one of the, you know, if you talk numbers, I think the Gulf War illness has a tremendous amount of people that are suffering.
It's over 400,000 by Shinseki's own admission.
Yeah, it's not just TBIs, and it's not our current, you know, we have the burn pits and all, but if we look at the Gulf War illness, it is huge. It's a huge problem that's not being addressed appropriately by the VA. And we get into a backlog situation, and you have Vietnam vets, you still have World War II vets coming in for benefits, or Korean War veterans. And then you have a new war that's generated even more. It's the system, as we were told by one of the generals when we were up at the 10-year anniversary of Kuwait's freedom.
Yeah, you and I were right there together.
With General Horner saying he knew they knew the system was broke, they just didn't know how bad it was broke. And that's very telling when a general of the Air Force, the Air War commander for the Gulf War, you know, says that. He definitely was having some health problems himself. And I'm just shocked that more of the field grade officers and higher generals have not come forth to really speak up for the Gulf War vets that are suffering. It's like, what happened? What happened to standing behind your troops and, you know, standing up and saying they need help and we're going to get it, you know. We don't see that happening.
Well, the same thing's happening today because with the kids from Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom and from Somalia and the Balkans, we're seeing exactly the same thing. One recent thing that's happened, and we're going to come talk about this in a couple of weeks, is we got the military still blowing up the areas where DU contamination is on Oahu, on the main island of Hawaii, and now we got people sick directly after the detonation that spread the contamination that was measured coming off the installation when they did it. This is all brand new.
So, America, wake up, listen, hear about your vets, and speak up for them. We need it. We need our healthy American citizens to stand up for their vets that were sent in harm's way.
Thank you, Denise. Thanks for calling in. I always need you. I love you. You've done so much for everybody. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it. Let's do something. We got a whole new group to take care of before we go into another war. And that's all. Drums are beating for another war. We can't have it. Well, take care, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. Good night. Thank you, Denise.
Welcome.